And welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon. Our old buddy Gordon Frick is here. Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body towing, and used car facility in Hoosick, New York. Gordon has been in the game for a long time, going all the way back to 1979 in Wolfsburg, Germany. See, I'm making you feel old right now.
Well,
our old buddy, you go way back.
You got to rub it in, don't you?
Go back to the 70s. He knows all about cars and trucks. You give us a call now. Get in the line. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Of course, you could always go the social media route. We encourage that as well to some extent. You can go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and comment there. Or you can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC radio. That's another way. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Okay? And try to be as specific as you can. You know, let us know the make, the model, the problems, your complaints, etc. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ray.
How are you doing? How's the business?
Very good. Good. Yeah. It's a little slow time of the year for most repair shops.
You'd think that with the winter and the slushing around,
well,
that it would be a big time.
The funny thing about it is you're in the grips of winter. Nobody
right.
wants to do anything they don't have to. You got a lot of bills. You got heating bills. You got taxes.
Yeah.
It starts to free up a little bit. Pretty much in the spring. Things just loosen up. People feel better. There's more sunshine and all that, you know?
Yeah. All right. And, of course, my wife got the van inspected, so it passed for another year. We're very excited about that.
No major issues?
No, last year there was. Last year the tires looked apparently at 1 millimeter too thin, which I questioned. But, you know, we bought the new tires and passed the inspection. But So let's go right to the phones and... Alice in Canajo. Harry, Alice, you're on.
Hey, hi. That was quick.
Hi.
Well, I agree. I've got heating bills, I've got taxes, and I've also got dental bills, and I just got an estimate for over $1,000, maybe up to $1,500 for something that I don't want to have fixed, and I wanted a second opinion. I have a 2003 Saab. It's a 9.3, the small T turbo. But the thing is, it's had a lot of problems. Hello, by the way.
Hello.
Hi.
The airbag light keeps coming on.
Yep. Tell me what they discovered when they scanned that system. What did they tell you needs replacing?
The airbag, the passenger... pardon me, the front driver's airbag in the wheel, and that there is there's more pressure than there should be on it.
Okay, so they're saying that you need to have the airbag replaced on the driver's side.
No, it's the SID, the indicator thing itself. And they say they have to take out the, you know, really take apart the steering column and get behind the existing airbag to replace this.
This is a sensor?
Pardon me?
This is a sensor we're talking about?
A sensor, yeah.
There is a unit that connects the airbag that's on your steering wheel or where your horn is to the column and carries the wiring out to the rest of the system and allows the wheel to be turned. That unit's not very expensive, though. That's commonly called a spiral spring or a clock spring.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really a major cost on that car. The airbag itself is. The control unit for the airbag system is expensive.
I think that's it. It's the control unit for the airbag system.
Yeah, that could be. And the reason airbag components are so expensive is that, number one, they have to be of the utmost quality. They have to be reliable for fear of them either not working in the event of a crash,
mm-hmm.
Or, and it almost never happens, but going off unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that the only manufacturers building these components are either the car makers themselves or companies that do nothing but make those components.
Who are out of business.
Yeah. So you can't just go to the corner auto parts store and say, I'd like to get a control unit for my Saab. They just, it's not going to be available.
Well, you know, I really like my my repairman, and he says he's, you know, he's having trouble finding this. He's looking around for it. But my question is, do I really need to do it?
Well, legally you do not, and your car will pass state inspection with the airbag warning light on.
Uh-huh.
But you have to be aware of the fact that your airbags will very likely not work in the event of crash. So you have to bear in mind...
All of them or just that one?
Well, it's hard to say if the whole system is going to be down or if it's just
going
to be...
Well, I'll tell you, I'm sorry to take up the time, but I'll be very quick. It was in a... not an accident, but my daughter was driving the car. It hit a deep pothole and boom, all of the side bags on the passenger side deployed.
Oh, boy.
Boy, that was a bad hole.
It was a bad hole.
Yikes.
It was bad. But this same person replaced all of those, and it was not an... Fortunately, the insurance covered that. But it just seems as though, oh, my God, is this going to keep happening? The other thing about this is that the only reason I'm worried about it is that I might set it off. The horn is very hard to get to work, so I kind of pound on the on the wheel to make it beep.
Yeah, yeah. You won't. You're not going to set the bag off by hitting the pad.
No? I won't. Oh,
no.
Good.
But if the horn didn't work at all, there is a relationship between the horn and that spiral spring I was speaking about earlier. But to answer your question, you don't have to fix it, but you have to be prepared for it not to potentially work. And I've driven older cars like that I didn't feel that I wanted to put that money into, and I knew that I didn't have airbags working.
Right, and the trade-in value is just over $2,000 now.
It's not
dropped like lead.
Yeah, it's not going to be good.
And so $1,500 seems like a lot of money to bring.
Yeah, it's one of those decisions that you have to ponder yourself and decide, you know.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time to help me ponder.
Alice, thanks a lot for the call. So, I mean, you mentioned that it rarely happens, but it does happen that an airbag will deploy for no reason?
Very, very seldom, but not never.
Really?
And the reason
Have you ever seen it?
Well, I haven't seen it, but I know a person in my area who, oddly enough, was driving a Saab. It was an older, I think it was either a 900 convertible or a 93 convertible. He was driving the car along the road, on the road, and he heard a sizzling type of sound.
Yeah.
And within a few seconds, kabang!
Wow.
The airbag went off on the passenger side.
Thank God it was on the passenger side.
Scared the living daylights out of him. Those things go off like a gunshot. He started to slow down to pull over. Another sizzle, kabang, the one on the driver's side went off. Ooh. And I said to him, this happens so infrequently that I'm extremely surprised, but it did. And but people shouldn't be afraid that those airbags are going to just blow up going down the road. Very, very seldom.
Okay. Let's go to Martha in Gansford. Martha, you're on.
Hello. Yes, we had two 2004 Foresters, and we had to take one off the road. The brakes weren't working very well, and we didn't have the money for the insurance. And we ran it for a while in the drive back and forth, and we got a new battery for it. But then that battery died, and it just doesn't work, and it hasn't worked for a few months. And I'm wondering, could we take that battery out that had been new when we put it in and get it recharged, or would we have to get a new battery?
Very possibly. How old is the battery, the battery that you're considering using?
Well, I think it's about a year because it was new when we got it.
And has that battery been outside in that car all this time?
Yes.
So it's been through this past winter outside.
Well, in the garage. It's an unheated garage.
Okay. The battery could very well be good. What ideally should happen is it should go to a shop, for example, and be fully charged and tested. And they can very easily tell you after that if the battery's good. But it's worth a try. Batteries have gotten very expensive.
I know. And also, it's not good just to turn a car on and run it. Don't you have to maybe the plates are off it, so yeah. I have to drive it in the driveway. But should I drive it back and forth and try to get it up to about a 2 on that, I guess, revving the motor?
There's a couple of different schools of thought on what to do when a car is out of service. Ideally, cars like to be in regular service. They don't. It's not good to sit too long out of use, particularly outside, and even worse on the grass, which I've said before, because of the moisture situation under the car. So the question then is, well, what do I do? Do I kind of put it up, winterize it, so to speak, or take it out of service? When you do that, there's always things wrong with it when you go to use it again. Rusty brakes, rusty brake lines, maybe some bad gasoline. So starting it and running it, if you're going to do that, yes, you want to at least get the engine up to full operating temperature. In other words, a temperature gauge, if it has one, wants to be right in the middle. And it is good to sit in there and speed it up to 2,000 RPM because that just gets everything limbered up better. So at the very least, yes, if you're going to continue to do that, that's a good idea.
Right. Okay.
All right, Martha.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our guest is Gordon Fricke. You're listening to Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Vicki in Albany, you're on.
Hello. Yes, I have a 97 Honda Accord, which I've been very happy with. And recently, I'd say over the past 3 months, sporadically when I'm sitting at a red light, it completely stops. I have to put it in, it's in drive, and I have to put it in park and restart it, which it does immediately. But I have, and it's sporadic. I have no idea what triggers it or when it might happen. So it's probably been about 5 times in 3 months. What might it be?
So when
I have no idea.
When it does quit, it sounds as it's as if you shut the key off. You're not getting any chugging or sputtering
or lurching. Nothing. It's completely off.
And then when you go to restart it, does it start as if there was no trouble whatsoever?
Yes.
Okay. There are a couple of scenarios, and yours, because it starts immediately, it's probably not an electronic sensor getting too hot and failing intermittently. Do you find that when you're sitting at the traffic light that the idle is lower than normal? Does it feel like it's on the verge of stalling?
No. I don't have any inkling that it's going to happen.
There is a device on the engine, and it's called a couple of different things, but it could be called an idle air control valve, an idle stabilizer valve. That is the device that keeps the engine running at the correct RPM, and the computer makes that decision. There's no adjustments or things you set or move around, and it's possible that idle controller is just kind of losing its mind temporarily, and it just drops out of the picture, and then the engine starts immediately, and everything's back to normal. A couple things you can have done to service that if the problem is not found. That thing can be cleaned. The throttle plate can be cleaned. And there's a few things you can do just to work around it to see if that calms it down. But unfortunately, if it's an electronic glitch, it's going to be very hard to find out the cause of it until it really does it all the time and your mechanic can put his hand on the problem and say, yeah, it stalled for me 20 times. This is what I fixed, and now it's not stalling anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things.
All right, Vicki, we got to run here, but thanks a lot for the call. Zach, let's take a short break, and we'll be back with Gordon Fricke, 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Smith College Museum of Art, presenting Collecting Art of Asia, a 4-part exhibition celebrating 100 years of Asian art at Smith, from traditional to contemporary, now on view, smith.edu/artmuseum. Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility providing clinically trained nutritionists and exercise physiologists designing personalized wellness programs, saratogahealthandwellness.com. And Healthy Living Market and Cafe, an independently owned natural food market providing natural and organic foods, opening in the Wilton Mall this March, healthylivingmarket.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Time is 2:21. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we talk cars and trucks. And let's go back to the phones. Murray in Kingston. Murray, you're on.
Yes. Can you hear me properly?
More or less.
Yes. I have a Dodge Dart, 1974. Are you familiar with that car?
Dodge Dart.
That was a classic. Yeah, that was a very good, stable car back then.
Yeah, it still is. It's a Dodge Dart. This is what I found, and perhaps I should be speaking to a cooking show and not an automobile person.
Okay.
But no, please, give me a moment here.
You have a moment.
If I go from Kingston to Peekskill along the Taconic, yeah, I can actually roast a chicken on the engine. Uh-huh. The engine seems to be very hot. Mm. It's probably a cast iron engine.
Sure.
But if I go from Kingston to the Newark Airport, I can actually cook a porterhouse steak.
Hmm.
I don't put onions on it or anything like that.
No.
But that's the call. That's why I'm making the call.
Very
Do you suggest I put the onions on the porterhouse?
Well, that's a good question.
When driving to the Newark Airport.
Yeah, that's a good.
Yes.
Gordon, what do you think about that?
Well, I would try it. You may not have enough distance there to get those onions completely softened, but
I like them crispy.
Oh boy! Well, what you need to do is keep it in a lower gear and really work it hard.
Murray, thanks for the call. All right, let's go. There's one in every bunch. Let's go to Joanne and Hope. Joanne, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a 2009 Honda Fit, the small car of the Hondas, and in looking over the owner's manual, there's a suggestion that the car be driven every day. And I'm wondering, why is that? I don't drive it every day.
Yeah.
And so there.
That's a very interesting thing to have in an owner's manual, because I get asked that question a lot. We just had one earlier today about what do you do when you don't drive a car on a regular basis. And I think Honda is just saying that if the car gets driven daily, things like the brake surfaces aren't going to get corroded and rusty, and the brake pads are going to stay clean and they're not going to stick. The engine's going to be started, run, and exercised every day. I think if you did it tell you an explanation of why they're recommending that?
No. So I've been only left to imagine that it was maybe something to do with the battery.
That's part of it, too. It keeps the battery at the right level of charge, providing you do more than just a two-second drive. But I think it's basically they're telling you to keep everything operating and limbered up, and the car will start and run and provide you with great service. Very interesting thing to have in an owner's manual.
And conversely, then, what is being damaged? You said the brake.
Well, if the car sits,
yeah,
let's say the car sits around for weeks at a time, the battery is slowly discharging just by itself, by all the little draws and consumers that are on.
Right.
The brake surfaces are going to rust over because they're just raw metal. They're shiny metal originally, and so you're going to end up with rust on the brake surfaces. Moisture, condensation, a whole bunch of things will creep up. Cars that sit around all the time, let's say you have a 10-year-old car with 20,000 miles on it, people might jump saying, man, this is going to be like a brand new car. Not necessarily so, because of all that lack of use and sitting around.
Yeah.
So.
Would they just the occasional once a week then not be as damaging?
Is it you don't even drive it that often sometimes?
I mean, there can be occasion where there's no reason to, so yeah, it doesn't go but once a week.
Are you is the car in the garage or are you outside with it?
No, it only has like a little Quonset hoodie kind of fabric shelter.
Yeah.
We're in the Adirondacks.
Yeah. I mean, I've had this discussion with lots of people, and some people say, well, I just don't have anywhere to go every day. You know, retired people or whatever. They don't.
Yeah.
It's winter time. It's too cold. I don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. The weather's a big part of this.
I guess
yes.
if you don't, you don't. I would just drive it, you know, as often as what's reasonable for you.
Well, I was just curious as to what you would think about this.
Yeah, maybe you could cook some steaks in there.
Well, you know,
I'm not going that far.
Okay.
I've made the suggestion before, but, you know, if you want to let Ray borrow it, could bring it. He could use an economical car.
Sure, I could put it in the trunk of my car.
There you go.
And it is economical, yes, indeed.
Well, Joanne, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. Now I'm just thinking about Porterhouse and
fried onions. That was a good story.
1-800-348-2551. Carrie in Kingston. Carrie, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to make a point about warning lights. I have a friend who drives an old Volvo, and she was driving down, and her warning light came on, and she ignored it for a couple of months. She didn't want to bother with it. She's driving down the road about 55 miles an hour, and the thing explodes. The airbag explodes. It's her airbag warning light. She ignores the airbag explodes. She can't see how she can't drive. Even though she's going 55, she can't see to pull off to the side of the road. It was very, very, very bad, and she eventually did get off to the side of the road, but it really shook her. So I just want to make that point. It does happen, and when it happens, it's pretty catastrophic.
Yes. Well, you heard my earlier comment. A friend of mine did have that occur. I don't know if you were listening earlier.
I heard that comment, but I didn't hear the rest of it, which is that it can be life-threatening.
Oh, yeah, it's very uncommon, but yes, the explosion that goes off, number one, is very frightening. And correct, when the driver's airbag goes off, it will block your vision, and it can be kind of tangled up in the steering wheel. Definitely a major issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Carrie, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Jerry in Hillsdale. Jerry.
Yes, hi. Got a 2001 Subaru Forester. Had a lot of work done on the engine recently, new head gaskets, timing belts. Took care of a lot of problems, but still had problems with a check engine light. Just got it through inspection a little while ago. They got the engine light to go off, the check engine light to go off, put in a new oxygen sensor, and after driving it about 40 miles after the inspection, the check engine light comes back on. Any ideas on this?
Do you know what the trouble code is currently?
Not currently.
Okay.
It was the NOx sensor, but that was cleared. Then it was the oxygen sensor, and it was also the catalytic converter. One of the sensors there was on.
Those are
They were able to clear them all out and reset them. Now,
did they repair anything, or they just cleared the light and it got through enough of the test to pass the inspection?
They did the oxygen sensor.
They did, okay.
That was a new one. And then there was problems getting it all reset and cleared. But finally it cleared up and looked like everything was okay.
Yeah. Those three codes are very common on Subarus. The catalytic converter is very common. That's a PO420. The oxygen sensor is also very common. Just had one in the shop this morning. And what was the other one? Oh, the NOx sensor. That's very common too, and that's a fairly easy repair. The converter's the very expensive one, but I can't answer your question because I don't know which one it is. Yeah, because it could be one of maybe 50 or 60.
Yeah, I understand.
But it could be another one. It could be of the three you've had possibly. Especially if the converter never was addressed, that may be back on again for that very reason.
Yeah.
Now, is this one of those cars where you can check the codes yourself? In other words, on mine, you can just press some buttons on the dash.
Yeah. No. Very few cars offer that self-diagnostic capability like yours. His car has to be plugged into a scanner.
Okay.
It was interesting when we redid the engine, when they did the timing belt, that they found that the knock was coming from a tensioner or something on it, on the belt itself, and that's where the knock was coming from. But one of the people I talked to said, move the NOx sensor back onto the engine. There was a place, and we did that. They did that. and that seemed to have taken care of the knock sensor.
Yeah, I would get it scanned and then see what the code is and go from there.
Yeah, and call us next month.
The good thing is you got it through inspection, so you got some time to deal with it, you know.
That's right, that's right.
Jerry, okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks much. Yeah. Bye.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We talk cars once a month, and today is the day. Claire in Albany with a dicey one. Claire, how are you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm fine. I have a 2000 Buick LeSabre. It has 32,000 miles on it. I drive it about twice a week. Now, I was in October, I was driving along 787, and all of a sudden, the car started shaking. It scared, you know, it scared me. So I drove home, and up the street, there's a neighborhood garage.
All right, don't mention names now, okay?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
So I went in, told them I was worried about my car. You know, it was shaking, and I left it there. Well, he called me up four different times. The first time, I needed new tires. I said, give me them, you know. Then it was the rods. They were bad. I said, do it. I said, listen, I just want the car to be safe. Don't bother calling me. So the next day he did call me, and he said the car was fine. Come on in. So I went in. It was $1,500. I paid him and drove out, but the car didn't sound right. It made a noise. My motor was used to purr like a baby before I brought it in. So the next day I went back and I said, something's wrong with my motor. It doesn't sound right. So he takes me out, he drives, and we go for a ride. And he said, nothing wrong with your car. I said, this is not my motor. It does not sound right. So I had to accept what he told me like a jerk. So anyway, I went. Next day, I went to another garage. It was my catalytic converter. The car, you know, needed a new one. That was $500. But I trust these guys now, the new garage that I went to. But how does one, especially a woman, who doesn't know the first thing about cars except how to start it and stop it, how does she tell an honest garage repairman?
Hmm. Well, wow. You know, that's a good question, and it really has more to do with initially how to read people and how to get a feel for who you're speaking, whether it's a mechanic or a plumber or a carpenter or your insurance adjuster or broker. If you can't do any research on that shop or if you don't know anybody that's gone there, it is a bit of trial and error to see how they react and how they answer your questions. And what I generally do in a case like this is I would try to have gone for a ride with you at the very beginning so we both could experience exactly what you feel is not right.
Yeah.
And let's say you went 45 miles an hour and the steering wheel started shaking. You'd say, there, that's it. That's what I'm talking about right there. Now we've got the problem narrowed down to know, both of us know what the symptoms are. Now it's up to me to find out what's causing it and to tell you about it, and we decide to fix it.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing. It's hard for me to answer that, you know, question for you because it has a lot to do with people and relationships. And
right, yeah. I understand. Well, you know, I had wished I'd gone to one of the television stations and had them send a reporter with me and, you know, look for dishonesty in the whole operation.
Well, I tell you what, Claire, now that you've found one that you trust, they are like gold. Hang on to that and put that one right near your heart.
I just tell you one thing, Ray?
Sure.
He's on 9W, and they're wonderful people.
All right, well, that's... Fair enough. I mean, that's good. It's positive. And I tell you what, that's a nice call, and thank you. And I'll tell you, I'm very happy with my mechanic. He did a great job when my wheels fell off right after the fun drive. Chris in Albany. Chris, you're up.
Hi. I have a 2001 Honda Accord, two-door, four-cylinder manual. I think it has 114,000 on it. I own the car for approximately 2 months before I stopped driving it because I had access to a company car. And for approximately a year, the car has more or less sat. And I guess my question is, I'm going to get it back on the road now, and I know that I need to do battery, that I'm positive about. The brakes are definitely rusted, but I guess simply, are there any, is there like a strict rule book of pretty much mandatory things, fluids I should change? Is there anything specific I should look for?
Yeah, that's a good question. That happens a lot. We just had a car that had been off the road for, 7 or 8 or 9 months. And there's a lot of common things that occur. Brake rotors get rusty. The brake pads can get rusty in their mountings. Tires can get cracked or flat spotted if they didn't have enough air in them and they sat a long time. The thing to do would be to make arrangements to get it to a shop and ask them to just give the car a complete check over and explain to them, or maybe it's got to be towed if it's not on the road, but you know, just express to them that that's what you want to do. You want to see what it's going to take to get the car safely back on the road. And if they would just go through it and then provide you with some estimates of what it would take and what's involved, and then you guys can make the decision. If they say, you know, the car really held up quite well, you'd need pads and rotors, you need a battery, you know, a few things don't look good under the hood, and that's basically the way to handle it. There are a lot of things that generally will deteriorate from sitting, but somebody's got to get their eyes on it and give you an assessment.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chris, thank you very much. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Jim in Syracuse. Jim, you're on.
Oh, hi. I got a 2010 Impala LT that is still under bumper-to-bumper warranty, 35.8, and I've been to the dealer 3 times. They have an intermittent problem with the turn signal indicator, and they're leaning towards the multi-function switch, but they won't act up when I take it. That's the problem. I've been in 3 times. Have you run across any versions of this?
Yeah, a lot. Not exactly in your particular car, but those multi-function switches definitely do fail. And we've replaced a lot of General Motors, different GM product switches. Yeah. Just did one yesterday, as a matter of fact. It was a Buick Century, I believe. What happens to yours? Does it just stop blinking?
Yeah, it stays at, well, it does. It does two different scenarios. I'll go to start to make a turn, and the sound will stop. The clicking or chiming sound or whatever you want to call it, or it'll start and it'll flash properly, and then it'll go solid. It won't work at all until I turn the wheel to either get into the turn or complete a turn. As soon as I move the steering wheel, it'll correct itself after a fashion.
This is what I usually ask people if I can't reproduce that problem. And a lot of the problem sometimes has to do with your lights, high and low beam. But if, let's say you can have that directional failing, if you just grab that the stalk for the switch and just wiggle it around a little bit, and if you think you can make it start working by the wiggle and reproduce that a bunch of times, chances are it's in that switch assembly.
Mm.
That's what generally will happen. Let's say you got a headlight issue and you go from high beam to low or vice versa, and you either lose your lights or it won't flash. A lot of people say, well, I kind of wiggled that switch all around, and all of a sudden, bang, they started working. And every time it fails, I do that, and the lights temporarily are cured. You more than likely have a switch problem.
Is that an expensive fix?
It can be. Yeah. Luckily for Jim, it's going to be under warranty. But if you have to pay out of pocket, some of those switches are a lot of money. You're talking $300, $400, $500 job total.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Zach, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. We hit the home stretch after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Transcend Dental, West Hurley and Manhattan. Dr. Bruce J. Milner, providing general and cosmetic dentistry and laser treatment for moderate to severe periodontal disease. TranscendDental.net. St. George's School, Clifton Park, New York, hosting an open house on Saturday, March 9th from 1 to 3 p.m. for their all-day pre-K and after-school enrichment program, georgecp.org. And Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here to answer your car conundrums. It's Dave and Gardner. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Gordon. Hey, Ray. How are you guys?
Good.
Very good.
Good, good, good. Well, you know, I've been a mechanic all my life, owned a couple of shops, and I've always been a big advocate of dry gas. And, you know, I usually use it when it gets real cold every other tank full. And here it is, my 16-year-old just started driving. And I said, make sure you put a container of dry gas in there, you know, at least every other tank full. So I gave her a couple to get us started with, and then she had to go buy a couple. And when she went into the store, they said, what are you using that stuff for? You don't need to use that anymore because now we have, you know, the additives in the gas, the ethanol and all that, and it does the same job as dry gas. And I almost hit the floor when I heard it. But then I said, you know, I guess it's worth researching. What do you guys think?
Well, that's a really good question because you're right. Prior to the ethanol and the gas, particularly in the winter, every shop had a case of dry gas ready to roll, and you put it in cars all the time.
Sure.
The gasoline now has 10% ethanol in it. And it's alcohol, so it is looking to soak up moisture. So you tend not to have the big globs of water in the gas anymore because it gets absorbed by that ethanol.
Is that right?
Yes.
So the ethanol really does absorb the water now.
But the ethanol does other things that are not so good, right?
The other thing is, though, the ethanol is and I think the scientific term is hygroscopic. It's looking for moisture. And it's going to grab it whenever and wherever it can. So you can get fuel that has way too much water in it, but it's being held in suspension by that ethanol to a point. And it's just like clouds. When they reach a point where they can't hold any more moisture, it rains. Now what happens is this gasoline with all the ethanol in it gets too much water in it, and it separates. They call that phase separation. Now you got two liquids in your tank, a complete glob of junk that has virtually no octane and barely wants to light, and then you got the rest of the gas left over that's also garbage. It's, you know, it's separated. So back to your question, can you still put isopropyl alcohol in there? And the answer is yes, because if you do have a moisture problem, you still can put the dry gas in there. It does not seem to be the issue that it used to be, where you'd get icing up of the filter and the lines and stuff like that.
Sure.
The additive nowadays, the additives are there to prevent that phase separation, to revitalize fuel that might have too much moisture in it. And it's still a good idea to use those additives, and they're just different now. They're called enzyme treatments, or I keep talking about one product that I use that's called, the name of it is Startron. It's in a bluish bottle, and it keeps gas fresh. It keeps it from separating. It's got some cleaners in it, and we use that quite a bit. And we're kind of close to the mountains, so, you know, we put it in two-stroke engines, lawnmower engines, snowmobile engines, all that stuff. So
And we used to use that a lot in diesels, correct me if I'm wrong.
Which stuff?
Because of the enzyme problem.
Yeah. Diesels had an issue, and they still do, with an actual bacteria growing in it.
Huh.
That's a different additive, but you're right.
Dave, thanks a lot.
All right. Well, then we're going to keep on using good old isopropyl alcohol.
Yeah, or just look into the newer stuff, the enzyme treatments. Take a look at the
what are you using? Is that Tecron?
Startron.
Startron.
Yep.
Okay.
Tecron is
part source.
Yeah. Tecron is more for cleaning your injectors and your valves and your pistons.
Right. Yeah.
Gotcha. Startron. Thank you very much, guys.
Dave, thanks a lot. John in Broad Auburn. John, you're on.
Hi, a Jeep Cherokee that is in great shape, except the cruise started becoming kind of iffy, and then the horn started having some problems. Is there any chance it would be anything that, other than a clock switch, I think it's called?
Yeah, is your cruise control on the steering?
Yes.
Steering wheel? Yep. And your horn is now not working?
Yes.
Okay. Very, very possible that that clock spring or spiral spring has possibly lost its connection between the steering wheel hub and the column. Is your airbag light on?
Yes.
Okay. It's very likely that that clock spring is going to fix all three problems. Can't guarantee it, but it's very likely because that carries the all the electrical signals from the steering wheel through the column, and it allows the wheel to turn but still maintain that contact. So I think that's what you're looking at.
And that's a pretty expensive fix.
No,
right?
That's not really that bad. No, no, I can't tell you off the top of my head because the parts prices do vary.
Yep.
But those clock springs or spiral springs are available aftermarket now. So if you price that out at maybe where you normally take your car, if you have a shop, ask for an estimate to replace that. And I guess don't go in there saying I've already got this all pre-diagnosed, but say potentially if it is my clock spring, give me an idea what a replacement would cost. Then you'll know if it's, you know, a couple $100 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you really need to have the horn working. You should.
Absolutely.
It'd be nice to get the airbags working, and then if the cruise works, you're home free.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
John, thanks a lot. Peter in Albany, you're next with Gordon Fricke. Hello.
Yeah, I didn't hear who you announced.
Oh, I said Peter in Albany. You're next with Gordon Fricke. How you doing?
Fun. Great, thanks. Question, I don't know if Gordon has any experience with this. I'm looking at Chrysler Crossfires, the used ones. Obviously, they're used. They don't make them anymore. I wonder if he had any opinion on their compared to other sports cars or any other opinion and any fatal flaws.
Nice looking car. I've seen those.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. Well, that car was born from Chrysler and Mercedes-Benz's venture back in, it started in, the venture was in 98, and I forgot when it ended.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago.
Right.
That car is, I think, for the most part, a Mercedes-Benz product that they changed a few things around and shipped them over here to get them into the network of the Chrysler dealers because there's so many in the U.S.
Yeah.
I don't have much experience with the car. I don't see many of them at all.
That's a good thing then, right?
There's not many in my area.
Oh,
you know, it was not a high volume car.
Yeah.
And you know, we're kind of semi out in the sticks where we are, so we don't see a lot of models like that. I haven't heard a lot about them one way or the other. I do know a guy in the area that did have one for a while, and he loved it because it really, you know, it feels like a European car.
Right.
But you might want to just see what the likelihood of making sure parts are still available and they're not completely off the chart expense-wise to keep this thing going. But
I would do
some research on it, and so, I mean, they're probably not that terribly expensive. Used,
right.
You know?
Yeah, they. I think they might have listed back in those days in the 2024 or so, down a little, and now, you know, depending on how many miles I see them, you know, if you Google them on one of the used websites, they go from, you know, 12 to 20.
Yeah.
You know, based on mileage.
Yeah.
But
I think I'd do a little bit of research before I just got one, but I don't know if I'd be afraid of it.
Yeah, well, I've test driven them. They seem great, and I just was looking for another opinion on them. I've heard a little bit of mixed reviews, mostly good reviews, but then somebody will say,
everyone will say that about every car.
Well,
okay.
The fact that it's a Mercedes-based car, you want to be a little careful because things could be expensive, you know?
Okay.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. Remember the Plymouth Prowler?
Yeah.
That was a cool. Have you ever seen one of those on the street?
Yes.
I don't know if I ever saw one on the road.
Same thing. You don't see many, but yeah, I remember when they were around. There was one of those in our area, too.
Yeah.
And just a strange, almost a concept car that it was surprising that they even got into production. They didn't do very well. They didn't sell many.
I wonder how they drove, though.
a lot of people complained because it was a V6 engine, and they thought a car like that should have the rumble and sound and feel of a V8.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people didn't like that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Ian in Colony, you're Ian, and I'm Ray, and you're on. That's what I meant to say.
I'm happy to be here too. Good afternoon to you both.
Welcome.
My question actually is about exterior maintenance. I just got a 95 Cougar, Mercury Cougar, in immaculate condition. It's got a cloth top on the back, and this got me to thinking about what should I do about car washes? If you go through the car wash with the brushes, will it do anything to the top? And if you don't do that, if you go through the brushless car wash, will the jets that spray the stuff on be so strong that it would damage the top?
Now, this is a convertible?
No, it's not a convertible. It has it's a coupe.
Go ahead. It has the simulated roof that kind of looks convertible-ish.
Yeah, that's right. It's a blue, looks like a cloth top.
Yeah.
And a couple other questions, and then I'll get off and let you talk.
Okay.
When I go through the car wash, if I go through the car wash, should I have the thing waxed? And do I need the bottom blast that they always are talking about?
Yeah.
For extra money.
I'm afraid about the converter for that.
Okay.
So... Those are my questions.
Those are good questions about car washes. I've often thought these myself. So you want to hang on the line or you want to listen off the phone?
Oh, I'll hang on.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. As to the car wash affecting that cloth roof, obviously the more times that gets scrubbed and hammered and beat up, it's eventually going to show some wear and tear. And the car is not brand new, so there is a concern there that it might start to tatter or make that top look funny. If you have the option, and most people can't wash their own cars in the winter because it's so cold, you don't have your hose out or whatever.
Exactly.
I think I would certainly still wash it. Maybe find an automatic car wash that advertises. I know there are some that are considered touchless. I don't know how good of a job they do, but that would certainly take the pressure off of that roof.
Well, then you'd have jets, though, right?
That's actually what I've been doing with it.
Yeah. And again, then, of course, the question is, are those jets too powerful? I would say keep your eye on that roof and run it through and see how it looks.
Yeah.
If you see anything starting to go wrong, you may be forced to hand wash that car to save the roof. The bottom spray is definitely a good idea in the winter because you got so much salt and grit and debris from the road under there that if it really is working, and sometimes you wonder if it's just the light coming on. This car is getting the
expensive
XYZ treatment.
Yes.
This car is getting the XYZ wax treatment. Is it just, is it like the Wizard of Oz and he's pushing buttons? But anyway, the bottom cleaning is definitely a good idea because that's where cars go for the first and you never see it. Brake lines, fuel lines, component. Well, Ray, you just experienced that rusty control arm.
Recently. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's something nobody would see or know unless it was on a lift in a shop and somebody happened to say, wow, I just happened to look, and you got a very rusty component underneath your car.
Yeah,
and that's where it comes from, road salt.
So, I mean, in general, car washes are okay.
Oh, yeah.
You go to car washes?
Well, I have my own place to do them, but I do wash my own cars quite regularly, and I have the opportunity to do it inside, so I spray under them and in the wheel wells, and I try to get all the garbage out of there if I can.
But do you ever have to deal with damage on a regular basis from someone saying, I went to a car wash and this and this happened?
Not in a long time.
Okay.
But there was one that popped up in the area that was terrible, and it would break antennas and wipers and the whole deal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Hey, Ian, thanks a lot. We're almost out of time. Appreciate the call.
Got it.
Okay, let's go to Teresa. Teresa, you got a minute or two here. Go ahead.
Okay, fast. I have a 2002 Chrysler Concorde. My husband changed the battery. He did not change it according to the manual, which says you could just turn the tire. He took the tire off and, I guess, took it from the underneath. Since then, our radio has no volume. I can barely hear, like the radio might be on, but I cannot adjust the volume to hear it. What could have happened? Any idea?
Well, do you think it was directly after the battery got changed?
By all means.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes those are just bad coincidences.
Oh.
And when it occurs to a shop, it's very hard sometimes for the customer and the shop owner to agree that I'm sorry, but what we didn't do anything intentionally here, and it just, you know, it's like when you go in the room and you turn on the light and the light bulb blows.
Yeah.
Was it going to go anyway, or did you do it by hitting the switch wrong? But I don't know if there was any relationship to that or not. What you could do, and it's not going to hurt anything, is have your husband disconnect that battery for a few minutes and reconnect it and just see if anything changes, if it boots up the radio and maybe it works. It could be a glitch from having the low voltage and or him changing that battery. I mean, it's possible.
Well, that's very interesting. So in other words, reboot the...
Just try it. What do you got to lose? Unhook the battery for a few minutes, reconnect it, make sure everything is off before he does it, and then turn everything back on.
Well, you could just pull the fuse, right?
You could do that, too, if you can find one that does solely the radio, but there may be more than one involved.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But there would be no... the very fact that you could kind of hear the radio,
yep,
but no volume, that's what throws me.
Yeah. Well,
if it were, you know, if it didn't work at all, yeah, I'd say, you know, something's there. But so you think maybe just some power surge or lack of power.
It's possible. The other thing you could try to do, and this is real backwoods, but it does work, is bang on the radio. I'm dead serious.
Like a connection in the back is gone?
Yeah, just kind of hammer on it with his hand as, you know, the back of his a fist, and just see if that boom shocks the radio into working. You never know.
You mean inside the car?
Yeah.
You know, the front of it.
Yeah,
okay.
Just bang on where the radio is housed. Just give it a couple of decent shots.
See?
Just see if it all of a sudden either crackles to life or it works or it doesn't.
Well, that's it for today, but that's the kind
Thank
of scientific you. Answer we're looking for, Teresa.
Right.
Just smash it with your fist. All right, well, we're done. You know, but it works most of the time. That's the funny thing.
That's what all these high-tech computer labs do. When nobody sees it, they bang on them.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today. Gordon Fricke, a great job, as always. Sorry to Bill and Charlene and Kevin, who didn't make it through. Try a little earlier next time. We'll try to get you in. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. And Albany Institute of History and Art, presenting the legacy of Currier and Ives, shaping the American spirit, now through June 15th, albanyinstitute.org. That's it for today's program. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke. A splendid job. We'll see Gordon next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls, Matthew Don Diego for answering the phone calls. Patrick Donges is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Moyers and Company, and next week on Medical Monday with Alan Chartok, Dr. Mark Pettis. Stay tuned now for a news update.